The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. We, as always, begin each hour with our impact segment, 20-plus minutes of uninterrupted dialogue and discussion. My next guest, and I actually have two men that will be on the line, but my primary guest is returning. Many of you know the name Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado. Back in 2012, something occurred in Jack's business, by which here we are some 9 years later, still talking about religious freedom and faith and the state of our country. And Jack has a brand new book out. It's entitled The Cost of My Faith, How a Decision in My Cake Shop Took Me to the Supreme Court. Jack Phillips is on the hotline, as well as Jonathan Scruggs from the Alliance Defending Freedom. Jack and Jonathan, welcome to the Frank Sontag Show.
Thanks, Frank, for having us. Appreciate it.
Jack, it's good to hear your voice. It's been a while since you've been on, and I know that the last 8-plus years have been quite a journey for you. Before we talk about your book, which is the primary reason we have you on, please talk about your faith in Christ, maybe your upbringing, because I know the trials that you have endured over the last 8-plus years can only bear witness to the truth of Christ and your love for him and your faith in him.
Yeah. So, you know, my faith, I grew up going to church every Sunday and just not really paying attention to it. And, you know, like when I got to be 17 or so, I stopped going to church and, you know, my faith was non-existent. I didn't have any reason to go to church anymore. But then as I, you know, got older and got married and had a couple kids, then I had to stop and look at my life. But one day as I was traveling home from work, like the Holy Spirit showed up in my car and convicted me of my sins. And I became a Christian right then. And I try and explain that more clearly in The Cost of My Faith. And that was one of the more fun chapters to read or to write. But it explains how my faith compels all my actions, including, you know, the way that I treat all my customers and my employees and my family and my friends, how I handle my money. As far as, you know, the customers, you know, it compels me to serve everybody. But at the same time, I can't express every message that people ask me to create on a cake.
How did Masterpiece Cake Shop become a reality? Talk about, please, the early times of your cake shop, and then we can get to the specifics about the impact that your faith has on your ability to create things like cakes, etc.
Yeah, well, I had no plans when I graduated high school, but I needed a job, and a man that lived across the street from me owned a large wholesale bakery, you know, like 100 employees and, you know, conveyor belts with donuts and Danish and those kind of things. It was huge and fast and fun. And he was gracious enough to hire me, and I soon found that I loved baking. And I thought, one day I'll open up my own bakery. And then eventually he bought out another bakery and brought in cake decorators, and I'd never seen that. But I have an artistic background. It's a gift that God's given me, and I knew immediately when I saw them, instead of doing 100 cakes at a time, I'd be doing one cake at a time, one custom cake at a time. The cake would be my new canvas, and I knew I would open a cake shop as a bakery. And I knew way back then the name of the bakery. It was going to be Masterpiece Cake Shop, because Masterpiece says art, and Cake Shop says cakes. So, you know, you're not going to come in looking for a loaf of bread or a pie. And then also, in my mind, as a new Christian, when I came up with this idea that I wanted Master and Masterpiece to speak to me, that Jesus said, no man can serve two masters. And I wanted to know every day when I go to work, which master am I going to be serving? And I wanted it to be him.
Jack Phillips, author of the new book, The Cost of My Faith, is my guest. So in 2012, when all of a sudden you became somewhat of a national figure, because of what happened that day, of which we can talk a little bit about. One of the areas that you've been, well, attacked about, you've been examined, you've been asked is this idea of who you would bake a cake for according to your faith. For those that may not know the story, can you be more specific about this idea of baking a cake?
Yeah, I will bake a cake for anybody that comes to my shop. I serve everybody, like I said. But there are certain cakes that my wife and I, as we were planning the bakery, we decided there are cakes that we just can't create. And among them would be cakes that celebrate Halloween, which is a huge business in the huge deal in the cake and baking business. And we also wouldn't design and create cakes that were anti-American or racist or cakes that would insult or denigrate anybody, including people who identify as LGBT. But we also decided right from the start that we wouldn't create cakes for same-sex weddings, which back in 1993, almost 28 years ago, that wasn't on the radar. In fact, Colorado's constitution defined that a marriage was between a man and a woman and how old you had to be and all those things. So it was a combination of all those things. And so when these two men came in asking for a cake to celebrate a same-sex marriage, I knew that it was a cake that I couldn't create. So I tried to gently tell them, you know, graciously, sorry guys, I don't make cakes for same-sex weddings, but I'll sell you anything else in my shop. I'll do other custom work for you. But I can't create that cake because a wedding cake has an inherent message. And they stormed out of the shop and swearing at me and flipping me off and went to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, filed a complaint, and we ended up in court.
And the travails over years in court, you eventually ended up in the Supreme Court of all places.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Supreme Court, you know, you can say, I'm going to sue you and I'm going to take you to the Supreme Court. Most people don't know the Supreme Court turns down 99% of the cases that are presented to them. And the few that make it to the court, I'm not sure that mine would have. It came from a lower court. It's not from federal circuit courts or anything like that. But they did take our case. And the day that they announced that they were going to take our case was crazy. It was fun. I had, you know, like the press calling me, people coming by, you know, hundreds of people coming by the shop and calling. But that very day, one of the calls we got was from an attorney here in Colorado who asked us to create a custom cake, and that cake would be blue on the outside, and it would be pink on the inside, and those colors were to celebrate a gender transition, changing from male to female. So again, I served everybody. We tried to explain to this person, this attorney, that this is not a cake we can create because of the message, but we're glad to create other custom work for you. You're welcome to buy anything in my store. But that wasn't good enough, so this attorney went to the Civil Rights Commission and filed another complaint. We ended up back in court again.
Jack Phillips is my guest. It's amazing. And I'll ask the simple question. I got emails last night from people knowing that you'd be on today. Well, would he bake the cake now? And I saw you on The View once and played that audio. And with respect, not you, but that ridiculous audio about, well, Jesus would bake the cake, get over it. And you were just kind of placated as someone who is Christian in name and not in action or what the Bible calls us to do. So the idea of making this cake and not choosing to do it, that's impacted you and cost you professionally, personally, in so many ways. And maybe you can talk about that decision and throw the question out. Well, knowing now what you didn't know then, would you bake the cake after all?
Well, the lines in the sand, so to speak, that my wife and I had drawn, you know, before we opened the shop, the different cakes that we wouldn't create, that line hasn't changed. And no, I wouldn't create that cake, that celebration, now or next week, next year, ever. Those lines in the sand are firmly drawn, and the Bible hasn't changed, and God's definition of marriage hasn't changed. But yeah, it has been costly. At the time that the two men came in, I had 10 employees, and that was reduced down to 4 when the Colorado Civil Rights Commission ordered me to start creating cakes for every event, every wedding, regardless of who was asking for it. And I also wouldn't be able to help design the cake. If they wanted a cake with an adult theme or pornographic images, I would not be allowed to deny that. And so our choice was either take those options or stop making wedding cakes entirely, which we had to do, and that was a large portion of our income. But the ruling was, you know, so clear that you do one or the other, and so we gave up our very lucrative wedding business. And I would still do it again today.
So you say you would still do it today and in the trials that you've persevered. Have you experienced God through all of this? I mean, I get calls from the program from people that are non-believers saying, oh, you Christians, and you talk about religious persecution in America, no such thing. And I'm like, well, you just don't want to know the truth of that one.
Yeah, and, you know, every American should be free to live and work according to their conscience without fear of punishment from the government. And this was, you know, clear punishment from the government. And the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in our favor because of the hostility that the Civil Rights Commission showed to me. They compared one of the commissioners called religious freedom a despicable piece of rhetoric, and compared my decision not to create a wedding cake with perpetrators of the Holocaust and slavery. And as far as the Holocaust goes, that was very hurtful because my dad served in World War II, and he got a Purple Heart. He was wounded in a mortar attack. He fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He landed on Normandy, and he was part of a group that helped liberate Buchenwald concentration camp. And he described the horrors of the place, the smell, and you can look it up, and it's the atrocities of that. And for this commissioner to compare not creating a cake that violates my deeply held core beliefs to the perpetrators of the Holocaust was just atrocious. And the Supreme Court called him out on that and said, you were being openly hostile to Jack and his faith, and you can't do that. And besides, they said you also didn't treat Jack equally with other bakeries, because a man in Denver here went around to three different bakeries and asked them to create cakes with anti-gay marriage sentiments on them, and they all declined to create them, which I agree with. They should be able to decline that. But the Civil Rights Commission said they're declining the message, not you and your Christian faith. So identical problems, but they ruled in favor of the bakeries there and against me, and the Supreme Court said, you are not treating them equally, and you can't do that. And so those were two of the key points that gave us the 7-2 victory.
Jack Phillips is author of the new book, The Cost of My Faith, put out by Salem Books. 9 years later, safe to say in 2012, well, I'll ask, did you ever have any aspirations of being an author of all things?
No, in high school, for me, I went to all the art classes I could take, and if I had to come up with a 10-page paper, it would have been 9 illustrations and a map, so to contemplate back then, sitting down to write a book would have just been the most ridiculous idea I could come up with. But as I thought about it when I was first approached with this idea, I thought, it'd be good to write my story so that my kids and my grandkids will know what actually happened that day. And then I had help, you know, with the writing part and setting it all up and grammar. You know, one of the ladies at Salem, one of the editors, gave me some great grammar lessons. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot more in the last year that way than I did in school. But the book is, you know, in part to explain to my kids, but it's also a defense that everybody who reads it can say, this isn't just about Jack, and I hope Jack gets to make cakes again. This is, you know, something that, a problem that every American is going to have to deal with. You're going to have to, you know, draw your lines and make sure that they're worth fighting for. But this is so much deeper than just Jack and wedding cakes. This is about every American not being forced to express messages that they don't want to, and those kind of things.
When I wrote my first book, the aftermath and the experience of being an author wasn't what I thought it would be. I thought, wow, I'm published now. I've got a book. But it was very strange, Jack. I felt kind of weird about putting my story in there and all the details. And even writing the book was unnerving at times. So now that I've got your book in my hand, it's a handsome book. It's filled with all sorts of truth, biblically, and also what you've been through. Just a very easy question, but I'd really like to go deep. Are you pleased with the way the book ended up? Did you leave anything out that you think now, well, maybe I should have written this in a different way? What are your thoughts on now that the book is a finished product?
You know, I love the book. I've read through all the different versions of it as we were working through it, and now I'm actually reading the book that you're holding in your hands, you know, cover to cover, to see what it ended up actually looking like to somebody else. But, yeah, I'm entirely pleased with it. There were stories that I wrote and things that I added, and the publishers say, you know, we want to give from this point to this point. Those are great stories, but let's pare them down. Let's take them out. Let's add to this one, and so we can get to the main point. And their advice was always so good. And yeah, I'm really pleased with the way that it turned out.
Wonderful. Last question, and anything else you want to share? Obviously, you have litigation still pending now again. How is your faith now? Is it sustained? Has it grown? Have you had dark seasons? I imagine you did over the last 8+ years where you're like, okay, this is quite a struggle, and we know we're going to get persecuted, but to actually live it is a whole different thing. How is your faith now?
Much stronger than it was before the two men came in. You know, I've thought about Jesus telling the parable of the 10 virgins while they were sleeping in the bridegroom is coming, and so they wake up, and five of them have their oil, and five of them are ready. Five of them don't have any oil, and that's a long story, but they're not ready. I feel like I was sleepwalking, and when this wake-up call came, I was more prepared. I had more oil because of just things like dealing with the Halloween stuff and having to decline cakes for years, and then when the big one comes, I knew where I was going to stand and how I could, you know, turn away a cake and not insult the customer and tell them, you know, I welcome you. But again, we are still in litigation. We just had a trial back in March. We're waiting for the judge to announce his decision. And if I were to win that case, the attorney who was suing me in that case promised me in a face-to-face meeting during mediation and under oath at the trial that if anything happened and I won this case or it was thrown out by a technicality or anything, I would get a call from this attorney the very next day, and we would start all over again.
My goodness. My goodness.
So, but I know that God's in control of all this stuff, and this person can't do anything without God's permission. So I'm completely good with whatever God wants to do with this situation.
Mm. Jack Phillips is author of the new book, The Cost of My Faith. Very last question. What's the state of Masterpiece Cake Shop now?
Masterpiece Cake Shop is still in business. We've been in business all the way through, and I was down to 4 employees. I've got like 6 or 7 now, but we're not doing wedding cakes yet, but God is still providing everything we need. All the employees are taken care of, and you know, business is still fun. I love working here every day.
Jack, God bless you. We're praying for you on this second go-round that God will continue to strengthen you and reveal what he's doing in you and for us to learn the realities of what it means to be a follower of Christ in this day and age. And thank you for writing the book, The Cost of My Faith, How a Decision in My Cake Shop Took Me to the Supreme Court, authored by Jack Phillips. Jack, it's good to hear your voice. God bless you, brother.
Same to you. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to give us the opportunity to talk about it today.
Amen, for sure. All right, we're going to spend a moment on the other side. I'll talk a little bit more about some things on my mind. We want to open the phone lines as well. 888-528-2557. And we'll break a tad early. More of this, the Frank Sontag Show next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. We're going to attempt to cover a lot of ground in the remaining 30 minutes, and the phone lines are open as well. If you care to call in, 888-528-2557. There is a new ruling here in California as it applies to churches. I'm going to share you that with you, that ruling, in a moment. There's also a new video that evidently has appeared showing January the 6th? Some call it the insurrection. Evidently, a new video has brought the idea that there was this insurrection by violent extremists kind of in a different light. In fact, there may have been some, let's just say, pushing the envelope a little bit in the wrong direction. What am I saying? There may have been some lying involved in all the prosecution. And a historic meeting with White House officials earlier today, that and much more. 888-528-2557. Let us begin with one of the brilliant minds in this day and age, talking about the state of our country. I hope you are concerned about what's going on in our country. Things are changing rapidly and dramatically. And Victor Davis Hanson is one and the same along the lines of one of our most brilliant minds. He shares his ideas of what we are seeing now in the country, why it's happening, and where we can go from here.
You look at this tapestry of events now unfolding in the U.S. What does it remind you of? What's the context for it?
It's a perfect storm, Tucker. The backstory is that we're running at about 7 to 12% per annum inflation this year. We printed $2 trillion this year in deficits. We owe $29 trillion in our national debt. We're paying some workers more money to stay home than to get out. We have this Orwellian job shortage, but high unemployment. And just when we need demand, the cure for all of this, we're telling the producing class, your taxes are going to go up, your regulations are going to become more severe, and we think you made too much money during this recession. So we've suppressed demand. Now, in how it applies to the gas and oil industry, remember the first thing this administration did was cancel Keystone. The second thing it did was ban all new exploration of gas and oil on federal lands. And the third thing it did, it unleashed John Kerry to warn everybody that gas and oil would be out of business in 20 years. And so this producing class said, you know what, we didn't do very well during the recession when there was no demand, but do we really want to risk and go out and get our rigs pumping and refining gas when we don't know what the restrictions or the tax code or what they think
That's
of
right.
us? So we're not producing oil and we're not producing gas as we should. And then finally, it's a very dangerous thing to provoke somebody like Vladimir Putin unless you're going to deter him. So we've talked tough and carried a twig, and these Russian-associated hackers know that. So they're not afraid of attacking the United States. And they're very brilliant. They have a Machiavellian insight into the American progressive line. They said, we're not after charities. We're not going to go after hospitals. We're just going to hack into a pipeline. And I think the subtext was, after all, you cancel pipelines, so what's the big deal? If gas goes up, you know, Stephen Chu in your last administration said, $10 a gallon was good. After all, that's going to suppress fossil fuels. That's a very dangerous thing, just as it is to print money and discourage production, so to provoke the Russians and not get tough. And I think Joe Biden needs to get on TV quick and say, you know what, we're in a inflationary cycle, and I'm calling on all of you producers and lumber and food and gas and oil to get out there and let's produce, and you're going to have a steady, predictable regulatory and tax climate, and we want you to help us out. But that's not the message we're getting. It's going to be like it was. I grew up 40 years ago and saw this happen with Jimmy Carter.
Deja vu all over again. Victor Davis Hanson. Speaking of the Biden administration and Joe Biden, did you see the story where he was out test driving a new electric Ford truck? One identified journalist made the mistake of asking him about Israel. And so Joe Biden's response when the journalist said, can I ask you a question about Israel? Quote, no, you can't. Not unless you get in front of the car as I step on it. I'm only teasing. End quote. LOL. Unbelievable. Speaking of Israel, my position, Israel has a right and a responsibility to defend itself. We hear this thing about both sides. This is not a both sides issue. Hamas is funded by Iran, and the Biden administration fell all over themselves early on to give Iran funds again and open that. Just 5 weeks ago, he restored $235 million in funding to the Palestinian Authority. Previous administration cut that off. Is it any coincidence that, well, we've had relative peace in the Middle East for years, and the next thing you know, we've got this very serious unfolding situation in Israel right now? I have a good friend who has a family member in Israel right now. Let me read what he sent me over the weekend. He said, I'm sure you've heard of the Hamas rocket attacks on Israel. I won't name the names, but some of my family members have been in the middle of that. They've been in Israel for 2 years. one pursuing an advanced degree at the University of Tel Aviv, finished that, ready to leave Israel, but then all flights have been canceled for now. Early last week, Hamas indiscriminately fired more than 2,000 rockets from the Gaza Strip at civilian targets. Lebanon and Syria have also sent in a few more. The Iron Dome has shot down more than 90%, but many have made it through. My family have spent hours in their hardened safe room every time the sirens go off. What is complicated, this is that just before the attacks, they packed up everything, sent it back to the States. And he said, so you can imagine the stress of having to care for two young boys, 18 months and 3 months, in a mostly empty apartment while being rocketed. In addition, Arabs are rioting in a number of cities throughout Israel, destroying businesses, burning down synagogues, pulling Jews out of their cars and beating them. Jewish extremists are rioting too. My family has a good friend who's an Arab Christian whose business was burned down. She lost everything. And we ask for prayers. Please pray for our children and all of those impacted right now. In the middle of this turmoil, that peace will prevail and my family will be home soon. That's a dear friend of mine. Go unnamed. 888-528-2557. Hey, speaking of that Biden administration, did you see where representatives of six major atheist and secular groups met with Biden administration officials, part of a discussion that was called historic? The White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, including Executive Director Melissa Rogers, held a meeting with representatives from six groups. You may recognize some of the groups. American Atheists, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, I'll come back to that one, the American Humanist Association, Center for Inquiry, Ex-Muslims of North America, and the Secular Coalition for America. Now, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, they are a number of people that they hate God, and they go after Christians mostly. They're a bully group. I've been their target at times. There's a website that will go unnamed. They pull audio clips from this program or put transcriptions up, misrepresent my policies and my positions. I don't know if this is still something they do consistently, but there was a time, and I made reference to it by taking screenshots. It's on their own website. They have something called the Weekly Award, the I'm Not Afraid to Burn in Hell Award. People gleefully posting selfies and all about mocking God. And this is the Freedom From Religion Foundation. They tend to go after groups or small towns by which they threaten with litigation, take down that cross from the cemetery or go after the local school. Like, you can't do that. And there isn't a day or two that goes by where there isn't a story about the Freedom From Religion Foundation and how they're speaking out against religious freedom, even though they say the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Mikey Weinstein is the head of that group. And so they and others met with the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, said it was historic and productive. American Atheist President Nick Fish said he was pleased that the administration, quote, takes seriously its obligation to meet the needs of atheists, humanists, and other non-religious Americans, end quote. Al Mohler, a theologian that many of you know, said that the secular agenda, if continue to be put forth and pushed forth, will have a devastating impact on anyone that represents any level of faith. Mohler said recently in one of his podcasts, quote, they're talking here about, say, a Christian adoption agency should not be able to operate on Christian convictions. In other words, everyone has to operate on a secular basis, end quote. 888-528-2557. When we come back, there's a new video showing that, of all things, U.S. Capitol Police on January 6th gave protesters the okay, which is not the narrative we hear a lot about. And we'll begin with a story right here in California about the state of church and what can happen now. A lawsuit has been decided about Governor Gavin Newsom telling churches they can't do certain things. We have a final settlement and judgment. We'll update you with that information in a moment. Also, those of you listening, we really could use your help in learning how to better serve you here at KKLA. If you would take a short survey when you have a few moments, let us improve your listening experience. All you have to do is go to kkla.com and enter the keyword survey to share your thoughts. And we would be grateful to hear from you and hear your thoughts as well as to how we can make your listening experience that much better. kkla.com, keyword is survey. We will continue with more of the Frank Sontag Show next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. As far as our state goes and the ongoing, what I see as overreach by the government as it applies to lockdowns and the like, today, a California district court entered an order approving Liberty Counsel's settlement of the lawsuit on behalf of Harvest Rock Church and Harvest International Ministry against California Governor Gavin Newsom. Once entered by the district court, this full settlement will be the first statewide permanent injunction in the country against COVID restrictions on churches and places of worship. Under the agreed statewide permanent injunction, all California churches may hold worship without discriminatory restrictions. Under the settlement, California may no longer impose those restrictions upon houses of worship. The governor must also pay Liberty Counsel $1.35 million to reimburse attorneys' fees and costs. The settlement references several Supreme Court opinions, including Harvest Rock Church versus Newsom, that include a long list of similar non-religious activity the High Court set forth as comparable gatherings. These include grocery stores, warehouses, big box stores, transportation, infrastructure, telecommunications, and much more. In other words, churches and places of worship may never again have discriminatory restrictions placed on them that are not equally applied to a long list of, quote, critical infrastructure or other essential services, end quote, as outlined in several Supreme Court precedents cited in the settlement agreement. Newsom originally imposed the most severe restrictions on churches, even home Bible studies and worship in the entire country. Now, after multiple reprimands from the U.S. Supreme Court, including two on behalf of Harvest Rock Church and Harvest International Ministry, Governor Newsom will be the first governor in America to have a permanent injunction against him on behalf of houses of worship. Good news in California. Speaking of, well, the pandemic and masks and shots and the like, Dr. Richard Bartlett is a doctor out of Texas. I know he's treated many COVID patients in Midland successfully with things like steroids and hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. Recently, he shared a video about the realities in the state of Texas with COVID and the quote-unquote vaccines.
Working in the ER, I'm now seeing more people come in who are having complications from the COVID shot. They're short of breath for 2 weeks after they received the shot 2 weeks before. They're having temporary neurologic episodes where their legs don't work and they fall flat on their face. They're having dizziness, shortness of breath, and lightheadedness, and feel like they're going to pass out. And so I'm seeing more, at this point, more complications from the shot in Lubbock, a college town, 18-year-olds coming in in excellent health before the shot, coming in 4 days later with 4 days of symptoms, or a gentleman who's short of breath for 2 weeks, or the lady who falls flat on her face. And so it's, I am seeing complications afterwards. That's being reported. But in this last shift, I had no COVID patients come in 48 hours. So we're in a different state now.
Dr. Richard Bartlett, we're in a different state, literally and figuratively. They're out of Texas. And I saw yesterday there were no COVID deaths reported in the state of Texas. Y'all remember that state? Joe Biden called them Neanderthals because of the mask mandates that they say, no thanks, and a whole array of other things. And yet when you look to Texas, it seems like they may know something a bit more about this reality with the virus and lockdowns than maybe even some of the health experts that have been adulated as the end-all with what to do and what not to do. What are your thoughts on January the 6th? I know the mainstream narrative is it was an insurrection. Joe Biden called it the worst attack on American soil since the Civil War. Huh? Well, evidently there's a video that has been circulated that directly contradicts government prosecutors' claims filed against at least one protester in the riots, I would call them riots, of January the 6th. The new video reveals that police invited several protesters into the Capitol that day. Several of the same protesters were later charged by prosecutors, and the press, for the most part, smeared them. A newly obtained video shows United States Capitol Police officers speaking with several protesters, including Jacob Chansley. That's the so-called Q shaman, you know, guy with the makeup and the helmet on. One officer identified in the video and confirmed by charging documents as Officer Keith Robichaud appears to tell Chansley and the group they won't stop them from entering the building. Quote, we're not against. You need to show us no attacking, no assault, remain calm. This has to be peaceful, Chansley responded with. The officer warned another protester to please act peacefully. Chansley yelled, we will do that. We have the right to peacefully assemble. The video contradicts what government prosecutors allege in a complaint filed 2 days later against Chansley, where they said, quote, Robichaud and other officers calmed the protesters somewhat and directed them to leave the area from the same way they entered. Chansley approached Officer Robichaud and screamed, among other things, that this was their house and that they were there to take the Capitol to get congressional leaders, end quote. Nothing in this new video, even remotely, points to that. In fact, it's a whole nother story. By the way, Chansley faces several counts, trespassing, disorderly conduct. He's been incarcerated since January. He's denied bail, awaiting trial, has no criminal record. The 4-second video clip is reported to be part of a much longer video that has yet to be released. And more than 120 U.S. generals and admirals have signed an open letter warning that the United States is embroiled in an existential fight and urged all citizens to get involved in local and state politics. The letter quotes, we are in a fight for our survival as a constitutional republic like no other time since our founding in 1776. The conflict is between supporters of socialism and Marxism versus supporters of constitutional freedom and liberty, end quote. Signed by 124 former military leaders. Letter also says, quote, China is the greatest external threat to America. Establishing cooperative relations with the Chinese Communist Party emboldens them to continue progress toward world dominion or domination, militarily, economically, politically, and technologically. We must impose more sanctions and restrictions to impede their world domination goal and protect America's interests, end quote. Letter went on to say, we support and hold accountable politicians who will act to counter socialism, Marxism, and progressivism, support our constitutional republic, and insist on fiscally responsible governing while focusing on all Americans, especially the middle class, not special interest or extremist groups, which are used to divide us into warring factions, end quote. Letter concludes by urging all citizens to get involved now at the local, state, or even the national level to elect political representatives who will act to save America, they call our constitutional republic, and hold those currently in office accountable. 120 retired U.S. military officers have signed on to this letter. I want to thank my guest today, Pastor Vody Baucom and Jack Phillips, both authors of new books. Dr. Baucom's book is called Fault Lines, and Jack Phillips' book is entitled The Cost of My Faith. If you missed any portion of this radio broadcast, you can always go to our website, kkla.com, and download the entire broadcast. And we hope that you do that for any time you miss any of these programs. And Lord willing, we will be back tomorrow for another Frank Sontag show. By the way, if you have any thoughts, you are more than welcome to send me a confidential email. I'm the only one that reads my emails at franksontag@kkla.com. Maybe even have a guest suggestion, franksontag@kkla.com. God bless you, each and every one of you. We hope and pray to see you tomorrow, same time always, 3 o'clock. Right here on 99.5 KKLA, this is the Frank Sontag Show.